Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 44 and a half. It is bonus edition, post-UFC on Fox 18. John Morgan here, my man Cole Coffey. We are in the shadows of the world-famous Palace Station, enjoying a cold, frosty beverage here, award-winning Pabst Blue Ribbon, and as a backup, just root beer. We're being a little bit more mature about things tonight. We're not having... It's just root beer.
But it's not your father's root beer.
It does have a slight bit of adult content to it.
Yeah, yeah. Makes me want to go back to Chicago. That's where we had it first time, and man, oh, it's so tasty. So tasty.
It is, man. That stuff's addicting, man. I like it a lot. So that'll be a nice way to wrap up the night. Well, UFC on Fox 18 is in the books. Ended just a little bit ago. I made my way over here so we could get together and chat about it, man. Anthony Johnson putting the stamp on Ryan Bader in the main event. Just 86 seconds it took him. Man, Anthony Johnson is a scary dude, man. I really honestly don't know if there's a scarier guy in mixed martial arts for now. You know, the new UFC game's coming out, and they've got Mike Tyson in it. Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me of Mike Tyson, where you're just going in there going, oh, my God, I've got to stay away from this guy.
Unreal. Like, the power, like, Bader's not a, you know, a light dude or anything. I'm like, Bader could take a punch, and there's something about those strikes that when he started taking a couple hits, you're just like, you just expected, like, hey, I'm going to see some more, you know, Bader's going to kind of push him back a little bit, just cover up a little bit, but it was just like, after a couple hits, he was just out. I mean, and you hear Rogan, I still hear it in my head. It was just so clear. He's just like, oh, he's got to hold on to that arm. He's going to be in trouble. He's got to hold on to that arm. He's like, oh, he doesn't have the arm. Oh, this is a really bad position from Ryan. And it was before you knew it. He's like, and there it is, you know, and just so scary. You know, you see Anthony, and I think Anthony is probably one of the nicest guys that does this sort of thing, but he has so much power in his hand. It's like little dynamite hands, and he lays those hands on you, man. And I don't think there's anybody that really, you know, wants to take more than one or two of those. I mean, and I think that's why it was so impressive when Daniel got the win, because Daniel took some of those punches.
Oh, he got knocked across the cage with the first shot.
And then you see what happens right there. It just shows the levels, and maybe people won't ever, you know, doubt, Daniel's chin, because I was amazed that he did it and stuff. But, you know, the power of Anthony Johnson, he's hands down has to be one of the strongest hitters, if not maybe the number two, maybe number one strongest powerful hitter.
I mean, he gets on top of Ryan Bader, and as you said, it's a bad position. You're like, oh, my God, he's in full mount. Like, this is not going to be good. And the punches are coming down. But the punches are punches we've seen before, you know, from other. It's like, it's that type of position where you're like, oh, dude, you need to roll. Especially a minute into the fight. You're like, dude, you need to move. You need to move. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, dude, he's out. Yeah. He's completely out.
He had his hand up as well. Those weren't, I mean, it looked like it was even going through his hand, maybe hitting his hand as it was grazing his head. So it wasn't even like – it looked like it was the flushest hit, but it was still that powerful that a couple shots, and it was just like, oh, my goodness.
That's amazing. Well,
you know, unreal.
We didn't get to hear from Ryan Bader. According to Dave Schaller, he was transported to the hospital for precautionary reasons. Understandable. Mm. I wouldn't be surprised if it was just like, dude, I don't want to talk to anybody tonight. Like, I'm pretty pissed off.
Yeah,
and bums.
Yeah, in some places actually, if it depends on the commission too, it depends on location. If they go unconscious, sometimes
automatic.
Even the commission's just like, no, he's got to go. He's got to take some place, you know.
Yeah.
Which is a little shitty at some places, because they're like, come on, bro. Like, it was a flash knockout. He's not really hurt, but you know, it is for the safety of the fighters and stuff like that. Because yeah, I mean, even when he got his arm. When you know, Anthony was getting his arm raised, he didn't look that bad there, you know.
He was definitely out, but he looked okay. But, you know, safety of the fighter is definitely number one. What do you think? I mean, the strategy of him going in, because the whole thing coming into this was, and we talked about it earlier in the week, I thought Anthony Johnson was going to win the fight. You got to go with the guy that has that knockout power. It's hard to doubt a guy like that. But Bader, you know, his wrestling is good. He's improving all the time. But my whole thing was, you got to stay away from the power. You got to stay away from the power. And then you try to do something later in the fight. You catch him in a transition. You do whatever. What did you think about, I mean, basically the decision of rushing in right from the get-go?
You know, I think eventually he knew nobody wants to stand and bang with Anthony. I mean, regardless of how tough you think your chin is, you know, and how maybe how much confidence you have in your own striking. But I would have thought that he would at least gave his striking a chance. You know, at least maybe try to absorb one shot. You know, at least try to at least throw a jab, fake the shot. You know, the fact that when he jumped right in against a guy that is not a slouch when it comes to wrestling,
no.
You know, so just to do it, it just seemed to me a bit premature that maybe, you know, even if he says it now, I bet he would come back and say that, yeah, you know, maybe I would have made a mistake. I made a mistake. You know, I don't think he's going to be like, you know, it was the right decision to dive in first without at least trying to stand on the feet. You know, there wasn't even really a fake or anything, and it surprised me. I mean, I think it was the right the decision to not want to stand with Anthony is definitely the right one, but unfortunately,
but not like that.
You know, at least, you know, fainted a little bit. At least try to throw something. Maybe he could have got the lucky punch or something. You know, at least throw a couple jabs. Just allow yourself to get into the flow of the fight.
I agree.
And I think just, you know, to make that the very first decision, nobody's making their quickest decisions and their best moves right from the start of the fight. At least allow it to do it. And the fact that he just did it, it just seemed to me like he didn't even want to give Anthony the chance to make contact. So it seemed to me like he was a little bit afraid of the power. With reason. No, who the fuck wants to take one of those
nobody,
punches?
Nobody.
You know, but, I just felt bad. I felt immediately bad for him after he did it.
Well, I mean, Bader was on a 5-fight winning streak. All 5 have gone to a decision. So that was the thing. I thought he would be patient. He would be, mm-hmm. you know, work it out, and then he didn't. You do feel bad for Ryan Bader. I think, you know, the guy is 32 years old. I hate to say it, but I feel like this is proof that he's never going to beat the top guys. I mean, I don't think we ever thought Ryan Bader was going to beat Jon Jones. Maybe Daniel Cormier, you know, you look at the matchup and you think, okay, more wrestling than anything, the body type. Anthony Johnson, we knew this was going to be a tough challenge. But, I mean, the guy is right there. I mean, he's top 5 in the world, but I just don't think he's ever going to be champion. And you feel for him because I feel like he gets zero respect whatsoever. Like, he gets essentially written off by everybody and kind of hated on. And I think that sucks because he is an elite-level athlete, an elite fighter, and I think it sucks he probably doesn't get the respect that he deserves. Meanwhile, Anthony Johnson, dude, I'm pumped. It looks like, for all intents and purposes, the way things lined out, he should get the winner of Daniel Cormier versus Jon Jones, which takes place at UFC 197, we think, on April 23rd. That was the fight that was supposed to be in New York. We don't know where it's going to be at now. I had heard Southern California for the longest time. Recently, I started hearing some people saying maybe it's going to take place in Atlanta. But I'm excited to see that fight, man. I'm excited to see Anthony Johnson back into the title fight. Of course, first is Daniel Cormier versus Jon Jones. But, man, I think Jon Jones beats Daniel Cormier. No offense, no disrespect to DC. I just think Jon Jones is that good. But honestly, I feel like Anthony Johnson, as weird as this may sound, has a better chance of beating Jon Jones than he does Daniel Cormier.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think to me, when it comes down to just, you know, when it comes to the wrestling, that was the big thing that really surprised me. He uses his wrestling so well to control the fight, and then he proved that he could take a punch because, you know, Anthony definitely hit Daniel. You know, and that was a big difference. And I think when it comes down to it, that wrestling, that ability of Daniel just to dictate where the fight goes, John has usually been able to dictate where it's going by the striking and whatnot. I think Anthony's going to be able to come in and provide that wrestling, and he has some more of that power that, you know, think about Daniel. He's so durable and he's so whatever that when Anthony fought Daniel, he was able to control it, so Anthony, you know, he hit him with some shots. We didn't do it, whereas Jones, if Jones gets in there, he's not going to be able to – he's going to try to stick away from it, kind of move around a little bit. And if Anthony gets his way and catches him with a couple of those things, makes him a little bit wobbly, and then to be able to get that wrestling in there, you know, it could be a bad day for Jones, and especially being gone. But I'm kind of with you as well. I mean, I just – when Daniel – I know Daniel's came a long way from when we saw him fight Jones – but there was such a big gap the last time they fought. I just think with that length and whatever that he just seems to have Daniel's number.
Yep.
But, you know, if it doesn't move that way and maybe Daniel's corrected and maybe it points then to the fact that maybe Jones being away something's kind of dragged him down a little bit. But
That's true. We don't know. But I mean, the Instagram pictures look strong.
Oh, my God. He looks fierce, dude. He looked fucking ripped and jacked. And you know, I'm very, very excited to see that one. And
it doesn't seem like it's been a negative for him at all.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like he's been laying off and laying away from the gym. You know, that's for sure.
No. And so I guess, you know, again, I can't pick John Jones. I can't pick anybody against John Jones, I should say. I mean, John Jones is John Jones. But I go back to what we were looking for in the beginning when this fight was supposed to be made to begin with Anthony Johnson. It's just that power, man. I mean, We have seen John Jones get hit a little bit. You know, we've seen him get roughed up a little bit, but he's fought through it. But, I mean, you get hit by Anthony Johnson, you don't fight through it. Like, you're done. That's it.
Yeah, it's true. I'm so glad he's fighting at this weight. I mean, he just looks so good. He looks so happy. He looks healthy. He looks happy. And, man, he's fucking so powerful.
He is.
That it's amazing to see. And I think he's doing all the right things right now. And it's just so impressive to watch. And just, like, it's such a beast. And I felt bad that, you know, like, so many cards come in this. There's so many changes of this and that. And so much, I think, with the RDA and McGregor and everything. And you kind of lose track. We say this all the time, that we lose track of the cards and whatnot.
I think this one got lost a little
bit. You know,
this
kind of got lost for me. And when I looked and I saw him, I was like, oh, fuck, I love fucking Bader. I love Johnson. Like, thank goodness. Let this save this card. Let this really go. And then to kind of have that quick fight, I was just like, fuck. You know, I knew it was going to be – I didn't expect it to be five rounds. That's for fucking sure. You
right,
know, I was
right.
just like, yeah, I'm not feeling it. But I thought it'd be more. So I just left feeling like, ugh. But again,
I agree,
I still –
but there's something fun about just seeing Johnson just crush him by where you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah, he looks so good right now. I mean, it's amazing. I feel so happy for the dude because, you know, I feel like he's came so far from when things were in question with his career and whether he was doing the right things and, you know, what he was doing to his body and all this other stuff. And then to see him right now firing on all cylinders and, you know, to see him knocking on the door for the next and I don't know if it's official or whatever, but I mean Rogan kind of matchmaking. It should be.
Yeah. Rogan made it official, so it's done.
I was like, oh man, there's Joe. Joe must
senior
know.
Vice President Joe Rogan made the decision. Yeah. Well, you have to. I mean, the guy's 11-1 in his last 12 fights. The only loss was to Cormier. I picked Anthony Johnson in that Daniel Cormier fight. I knew it was going to be a tough fight for him. Cormier's wrestling, of course, is so good. And his pace and all those things, and you worry about Johnson always breaking late. But I tell you what, man, when that fight started and Anthony Johnson came out and threw that big shot and just floored Daniel Cormier, I was feeling pretty damn good about my pick right there. And things didn't go that way, but I'm looking forward to it. Here's what I think is going to happen. It's just a guess. UFC 197, April 23rd, again, Daniel Cormier versus John Jones. Don't know where it's going to happen yet, but I think John Jones is going to win that fight, and Dave Schaller tonight said that – I think the UFC has kind of admitted, all right, April's not going to happen. You know what I mean? It's done. It's not happening. We'll get New York later. But they're targeting November now. They're trying to get November done for New York. And I think John Jones versus Anthony Johnson in New York in November makes a lot of sense. And that's a long time for Anthony Johnson to sit on the shelf, but – he's admitted that it's probably not the worst idea in the world to sit on the shelf. So even though myself and Cold Coffee were not in New Jersey, you know we got people everywhere, man. We got microphones set up.
We'll get you covered.
We got you covered. So let's listen to the press conference audio from Anthony Rumble Johnson, where you'll start out hearing Dave Schaller talk briefly about the goal in New York and kind of what's going on with Anthony Johnson. And then you'll hear Rumble himself and kind of what he thinks about what comes next. And it does sound like he will take another fight if need be. But I think if the title fight is on the table, he's going to sit around and wait for it. And I think you should do that. I've talked to a lot of fighters over the years. And the type of money and the type of life-changing opportunity that a title fight means, even though it's not typically a good idea to sit around and wait for fights, when it's a title fight and it's guaranteed if you sit around – it's usually worth your time to sit around for a little bit more just because the money and the opportunity can be pretty life-changing. So big, big win tonight at USC on Fox 18 for Anthony Rumble Johnson. Let's hear from the man himself at the evening's post-event press conference.
Dave, just a quick question for you. Mm-hmm. In regards of how it will pertain to Anthony Johnson, whether he's next in line for a shot at D.C. and what we're assuming is John Jones, do you guys have a statement that you can make about when that Jones and Cormier fight might take place? I know the rumored date was April at Madison Square Garden, but since that's looking dead in the water, do you guys have an official statement?
We expect to have an announcement within the next couple of days here. Things are shaking out, and I think you guys are going to be pleased with the outcome. And as for Anthony Johnson, Joe was already talking about plans for him. So as Ben said, and thank you, Ben, we usually don't make fights tonight, but we're going to get back to Vegas Tuesday and huddle on this.
Cool. Thank you, sir.
Good. Hey, Anthony. Rashad Evans had said that he didn't think that perhaps you were ready to fight Cormier. Do you agree with him? Why do you think he said that? And more importantly, do you feel ready now?
Probably. When did he say it?
It was just a few weeks ago.
Probably because I was getting ready for Ryan Bader, so I wasn't ready to fight Cormier. So I was getting ready for Bader, so he was right. You know, Rashad knows
how
I am.
No, he means when you fought him the first time.
Oh, when I fought him the first time, I wasn't. I was getting ready for John Jones, not Daniel Cormier, you know. I mean, it's a big difference when you're getting ready for 6'4", compared to, what is he, 5'10", 5'11", something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just, I wasn't, you know, but I still went out there and did my best.
And now, you know, going into this, knowing that it's going to be Jones or Cormier, how do you feel now? And do you think that you have enough time to prepare for either one of them with that type of mindset, knowing that now it's flipped around?
I definitely have enough time to get ready for whoever they put in front of me now. Nothing happened to me this fight. I'm not injured. So I just keep going forward and see what happens.
Since Cormier fought you the way that he did, do you think your opponent this time around thought maybe smother him and it'd be a little bit different? Were you prepared for that? Is that why you had the outcome that you had this time around?
Well, I had the outcome because I trained my ass off, you know? They said I was mentally weak, you know. I guess mentally weak people win, you know, and confident people lose.
How do you feel mentally? Why do you think that they think that way? And is there something different this time around?
Well, you know, when I fought Daniel, you know, I had first round was you know, I dropped him and I came in and tried to finish him and I gassed out. And so, you know, when you're gassed and you got somebody that, you know, like Daniel Cormier on top of you grinding on you, it can do a lot to you mentally and damn near break you. You know what I mean? And I guess they saw the one fight like that since I've been at 205 and they thought they figured me out. But that was fine. They brainwashed him to make him think that I was actually mentally weak, and that's fine with me. I won.
Fantastic! Congratulations.
So to me, who's the weak one?
Do you have a preference this time around? What do you want to fight, Jones, or just brand new person?
Well,
or
I get asked that question a lot. John and I will fight one day. You know, we have mutual respect for each other. We've never talked trash about each other. Every time we see each other, we show each other love. You know, especially with the media and everybody's hyping the fight up between him and I, you know, I was supposed to be the guy to knock him out and beat him and all that other stuff. And, you know, I think we definitely want to challenge each other and see what we're made of. We're just two guys, two alpha males like that, that are just competitive.
You see him bulking up in all these videos now and all the weight training that he's doing. Do you think that's in preparation for you or DC or either one?
I think John is just, he's an animal right now and he's doing whatever is best for him. I mean, if I had, 8 months or whatever, layoff like that, 8 month layoff, I'd be big too. You know, he's got enough time to sharpen up his tools and I think he's definitely doing that, but I think he's getting ready for the world.
Thank you.
Anthony, I'm about to ask you about something like an 8 month layoff, because if the Jones Cormier fight takes place in, let's say, late April, we were told we're going to find out in a few days, but let's say it happens in late April, let's say it goes five rounds again, and you wait for the winner, and let's say that's at the end of the year, are you comfortable waiting until the end of the year for that fight?
Yep, that's the biggest fight of my life. They want to make me wait that long, I'd definitely do it. It gives me plenty of time to get ready for whoever.
So no matter what, you're waiting for the winner of that fight?
I ain't gonna say no matter what. Because if somebody gets hurt and they need a replacement, I'll definitely jump in if I'm healthy and able to fight. you know, that's for light heavy and heavy.
Does that give you any concern if you did wait for that long and there would be delays? Because we've seen that happen with other guys before, like Rashad, for example, waited for a long time.
I've been out that long before. You know, I broke my hand when I was fighting for another organization. I broke my hand fighting Andre Arlovsky. I was out for, a couple of months. So it doesn't bother me at all. I usually come back better.
In terms of how the fight played out, did it? I mean, he basically shot in 8 or 10 seconds. Did that surprise you at all, or did you think he would take his time a little bit before he would shoot?
There were two ways this was going to play out. Either he was going to play it smart and hoping that he'd catch me out of position, or he was just going to bomb rush me and try to take me down. And he tried to bomb rush me, and it just didn't work out. You know what I mean? So I was expecting one of two things. And I like this game plan.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow bonus edition, episode number 44 and a half. John Morgan, Cold Coffee, talking about UFC on Fox 18. Cold Coffee, the co-main event. Big Ben Rothwell picks up another big victory for him. And, man, choking out Josh Barnett, did not see that one coming. Definitely thought Ben Rothwell could potentially win here. I didn't pull the trigger on picking him. It was weighing heavy on me. I mean, listen, Ben Rothwell, the man called me out at a press conference in the middle of last year in New Orleans. Like, the guy, you know, he's a good dude, man. He's very junkie friendly, man. He came to the junkie gathering last summer and hung out with a lot of guys. And he's a good dude, and he keeps it real. And he's on one of the best runs of his career. And I thought he had a chance, but I didn't pull the trigger. And I definitely didn't see him choking out Josh Barnett.
Not at all. And I would prepare to get another phone call or next time you see him. I mean, the great thing about Ben is
definitely
that
he'll call you out.
He's got such a fucking kick-ass personality when it comes to shit like this. Like, he'll be the first to admit, like, yeah, I probably, you know, I could see where most people thought I was going to lose, but you doubted me, so hey, fuck you, you know? but he does it in such a way, you're like, you're right, man, my bad, I'm a fucking ass, you know? And but good on him, like, my goodness, I thought just right from the get-go with him moving around, and Barnett, when you see Barnett on his own, he looks so fucking impressively large, just larger than life, but once they got in there and started moving around, Ben was right there with him, and if anything else, I'm looking at some points, I'm like, man, Ben's... is he fucking bigger than Barnett?
Right.
I'm like, he looks so much bigger now. But just the way he was moving around, I thought just his trying to push where the fight was going and moving around, I was just like, wow, Ben's really fucking going in there, you know, and was really starting to throw it. But, yeah, to end like that, you know, all I kept saying was like, fuck, do the laugh, you know, do the hoo-ha, you know, and good for him. I mean, like, what an impressive win. That's got to be right there at the top of the big names that he's done. But I mean, he showed it with Overeem. He showed it with all these other guys. He pulls these underdog wins, you know, out from somewhere. And it's just, you know, I'm finally ready to put it on the point. You know, not that I ever doubted it before, but, you know, he's another guy that's just like, you can't fucking count out Rothwell now. I mean, like, put him against a guy that most people, I would say, hands down, were probably saying, yes, I think he's got a chance, but I'm leaning on Luke. He's just, there's something about him. He's just fucking, Josh, but.
Right.
It's just like, you know, good on him. And then, I mean, was that the first time he's ever been submitted? Or first time he's ever been finished?
Josh Barnett was the first time he'd ever been submitted. He does have some submission losses on his record, but one was like an injury where he's like, okay, I'm out because
okay.
I'm hurt.
Yeah.
And another was to punches, so he did submit to punches.
Okay.
But it's the first time he's ever been an actual like submission hold, basically.
Yeah.
Amazing. And it's that same go-go choke that he used to choke out Matt Mitrione back in June in New Orleans. So it's the same move he's used twice in a row now. It's just impressive. You know, in retrospect, I guess – a lot of times, you know, I make picks for a fight, and then, you know, maybe, obviously, you know, I'm wrong. You know, I think over the past 2 years where we've actually been tracking our picks, I think I'm at like 65%, something like that, over the two-year period. So I'm wrong one-third of the time. And a lot of times I'll go back there and I'll look at it and be like, well, I still feel pretty good in my pick. I think I made the right choice or, you know, I made an understandable choice. But, you know, and I guess in looking at it, I mean, Rothwell is fighting so well right now, man. He just seems like in the prime of his career, if that's possible. For whatever reason, I mean, at 34 years old, it seems like he's really hitting his stride and just clicking on all cylinders. And, you know, we don't see him taken down a lot. We don't see him on his back a lot. And Josh Barnett, as great as he is at grappling, he doesn't have, like, a big power double leg where he's just going to shoot through you. And, you know, Rothwell definitely has some power. But even still, I never would have picked him by submission. I just never would have picked him by submission. And that's what I think makes this even more impressive. It's not just the fact that he won the fight, but just the way he won the fight seems like literally the least possible, least likely way to finish. In fact, I'm not a huge gambler by any stretch of the imagination. Thank God, since I live in Las Vegas, because I'd be broke. But I did look up the futures and just to see kind of what people were saying. It was plus 1,300. So that means you get 13-1 on your odds.
Wow.
If you had bet Ben Rothwell to win by submission.
That's crazy.
That's, I mean, the likelihood of that is nothing to give you 13-1 odds. So impressive. And now we've got an interesting spot in the heavyweight division, man, because, you know, obviously it was supposed to be Fabricio Werdum and Cain Velasquez fighting next week. That fell apart because they both got hurt. I think if you're the UFC, you put that fight back together, right? I mean, yes, Cain got hurt, and yes, Cain has had tons of injury issues, but Fabricio also got hurt. And so it's not like Cain bowed out and somebody else stepped in. You know, if Cain had bowed out and Stipe did step in as it was planned, then I don't think Cain's the number one contender anymore. You know what I mean? I think he has to go back and win another fight. Like, dude, bro, we gave you a chance. You got hurt again.
Yeah.
We can't do it. But the fact that both guys got hurt, it doesn't sound like both guys are going to be out for very long. I think that you do Fabricio Werdum versus Cain Velasquez again. If you're the UFC, I think you put that fight back together. But I honestly think probably the best fight to do now is Ben Rothwell and Stipe Miocic as a number one contender fight. Because, I mean, I know that may kind of suck for Stipe because you're like, bro, you know, you were going to have him step in and mm-hmm. he was going to be in the title fight. But that never really came to fruition. It never really happened. So I know you're kind of taking away a title fight, but I don't know. I don't think you should have Stipe just sitting out there waiting and then you got
right.
So I don't know. I guess it's kind of convoluted right now, and I hate to screw over anybody. I try to be fair in my planning and my matchmaking. But I think the right thing to do is Werdum versus Cain, reschedule it, and then Rothwell versus Stipe for a guaranteed title shot.
I think that's a great idea. I mean, it's hard to take it away from Cain or Fabricio, both of them, especially if it was injury. I mean, it was the right fight to be. So I think, you know, the fact that Stipe, yes, did have the opportunity to get the fight, you know, but he was getting it, given that opportunity due to an injury. Since, you know, injury took both parties out, I think that still put Stipe hands down in that, right in that contender range. But Ben as well has been there knocking on the door, and I think probably had every right to have that shot as well as Stipe did.
Yep.
So why not just fucking, you know, just put it out there and let him settle it? And I mean, Ben has said as much as before, like, fuck it, if that's what I have to do is go through the guys to get there, give me Stipe, give me whoever. So fucking Ben's going to be happy about that, and I think that's a great move. I mean, it's a jump up in position for his opponent, you know. It's not a big drop down from where Stipe's at to do it. You know, I think it's a nice one, and it still makes sense. I still want to see Fabricio Cain. I want to see where Cain has progressed. You know, he's come back, and I'd love to just see and take out all the bullshit of, you know, it was in Mexico, it's an altitude thing, it's this. That's fine. All right, let's come back. All right, you say you're good. All right, you say you're good. All right, now go and let's get that shit done and taken care of. You know, let there be a clear winner, and then let there just say, all right, Stipe, all right, Ben, you guys have both been knocking on the fucking doors. Let's just go battle it. Let's be done. Then nobody can say, all right, well, it probably should have been this guy's shot. It probably should have been this guy's shot. Like, that's been taken care of. Let's just get there and get it. So I think that's great. I mean, I definitely agree. I want to see Cain. I want to see Fabricio more than I want to see either one of those guys fight one of the other two guys. So
right. I mean, you have Travis Brown coming off a win. You have Alistair Overeem. You know, those guys could definitely make an argument that they deserve to be in the mix. And again, I mean, I guess the other thing you do, I mean, the only other way you could play it is Stipe sits and waits for the Verdum-Kane winner because he was already promised a title shot. But, I mean, he was literally promised a title shot for like 24 hours.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's why I don't feel bad about it. It's like, dude, we need you, and thanks for stepping in. And then it doesn't happen. I mean, I hate to, you know, like, I felt bad when Misha Tate got her title shot pulled because they were talking about it for like months. You know, after her win, you got the title shot. After Ronda's win, you're going to fight Misha next. And it's like, ah, we're just kidding. It's Holly Holm. You know, I felt bad for that. This one, I don't feel as bad because I don't feel like Kane was like for weeks and months, or Stipe, I should say, for weeks and months saying, I've got the title shot. So I feel like it's okay to yank it from. Worst case scenario, I guess you could say Stipe sits and waits in the wings for the winner of that fight. And then, you know, Rockwell's in a number one contender fight with somebody else. But to me, I think that's just laying things out way too far in advance.
Yeah.
I think Stipe and Rothwell is the right way to go.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Stipe probably doesn't want to sit out. I could see him if they said yes, by far. If you're willing to sit out right now, you'll be the guy that gets it. But I think it's a tough decision to sit out there and wait that long. I think, if anything, if they said, all right, hey, yeah, you'll get the next shot, or do you want to fight? I'm thinking he's probably going to say, let me fight one more time, because he's confident enough.
Right.
I think a lot of these guys, if you're not willing to say, well, I take that back. I mean, if you're not willing to say, yeah, just I can fight because I'm going to beat everybody. I'm going to be the champ. I have to beat everybody anyways. You know, but then that's tough to say, because if you do take that loss – and knowing that your next shot is going to be the title, and you decide, hey, I'm just a little antsy, I could use another 50, 60, 80, 100, whatever in my pocket with a win, but then you risk the fact if you take a loss, and in some guys' cases that immediately shoots him four or five guys down, that then he has to wait for a couple more matches and then has to win a couple more times. That's a tough gamble, but if that's the difference of like fighting within 4 months to 8 months, I could see where somebody might be like, fuck it, you know, put me in there. Give me a fight, you know, because, you know, a lot of guys aren't getting the sponsorship money that they were getting before, maybe some of the other stuff, so they kind of need to stay active. Most guys want to fight between three or four times a year. And if you're sitting there on the sideline just waiting for other two guys to get, you know, taken care of on an injury, and then there's no guarantee that something else doesn't happen, and maybe another injury on the mend happens, and then it pushes it back again. But, you know, I don't know.
It's interesting, man.
It is.
And then what happens if Verdum's injury is longer than we thought, or Kane's injury is longer than we thought? So, man, heavyweight's going to be real interesting over the next couple weeks and months to see how it all plays out. But, all right, let's hear from Mr. Ben Rothwell himself. Let Ben Big talk about it. He didn't give us any good laughs. He did on the Fox Sports post-fight show.
I did
tune into that. He did give Daniel Cormier a laugh. I think Daniel Cormier specifically requested a laugh.
That's awesome.
He didn't give us one there. But let's just hear from Mr. Rothwell himself about what he thinks should be next as he tries to get the heavyweight title. Seems incredible that Big Ben Rothwell may fight for a heavyweight title in 2016, but it is very possible.
Mr. Rothwell, congrats.
Well, thank you.
So you're in a kind of a unique position here because obviously you know what you want. You want a title shot, but do you sit around and wait or do you fight again?
I'd like to see what the offer is. I'd like to see them. You know, I think they don't make decisions tonight. I mean, they look at kind of what the situation is. And, you know, I don't know. Do they remake, you know, the former champ and champ? Do they take that fight still and get ready together? And then it's going to leave me in Stipe, I believe. And if they want to move things around and they're ready to put me in, I'll go in, I'll crush Verdum, and I'll take his belt.
If they offered you Stipe, would you do that fight with the winner getting, you know, next in line again?
Like I said, I want to see what the offer, you know, I want to see what happens, you know. But like I said, I'm ready. The bottom line is, you know, I think the belt's going to come secondary because my number one priority is laying waste to this entire division, you know. And I think tonight it wasn't about dancing or laughing. It was about making a statement. I made it tonight.
What can you point to something that has happened in the last four fights or so that's been kind of the difference that has got you over the hump to get to this point now where you're just kind of tearing through guys?
It's a combination of things, but it's, you know, you've heard me talk about it over and over again. When I moved back to Kenosha, Wisconsin, I got Rothel MMA started, you know, having my own gym, you know, finding Luis Claudio, you see him with me, having an incredible training crew that I have with me, James Boknovic, and my whole crew of, you know, everybody's helping me at the gym, and of course, having an incredible wife that I have. I call her a unicorn because, you know, I see a lot of guys, they have that woman around them, and I've watched women destroy champions, so I'm on the other end of the spectrum. I have a woman that's making me better every fight, and I think it's, I'm 34 years old, and I refuse to be placent. I'm getting better every fight. I'm working on my skills at all times. And after tonight, I made a vow. I did not like the way I went into the ring, how my body felt. It's just, like I said, I'm constantly learning. And the first round was more like a warm-up. And you've seen the second round. I feel I got to watch the fight, but I think the second round, I think I opened up. I had better defense, better striking. Obviously, I was on. I was ready to win the fight in the second round. So I need to work on that because I need to be that way the first round. And I made a vow to the universe and to the world of martial arts, which is carrying me through this, that Monday I'm going to go back and continue my training. I'm going to be ready for anything and everybody.
Could you explain the difference between front choke and you call that a go-go? Could you tell us is it a hand grip?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to show the technique, but it's obviously the hand grip because I know I hear people say things like 10 figures, squeezel diesel, and different variations of guillotine. It's none of those. If you watch what they do with their hands, you know, Luis and I shake our head. It's something very unique, and I'm very proud to be representing it with Luis because, you know, Hicks and Gracie's a renowned black belt. That's who made Luis a black belt, and when Hicks and Gracie goes to Luis, he says, show me this go-go. That's something special. Like, we you know, it's to watch Luis become a master himself, and he's creating his own things that are so effective. I feel like my submission skills are like a cheat code out there right now. Guys don't know what I'm doing, and you think it's going to stop at the choke. If the guy does get his takedown, it's not going to end there. I have an array of deadly skills off of my back, on top. Wherever the fight goes, I'm ready to end the fight. I mean that. I know a lot of people say it, but I'm proving it. Wherever the fight goes, I'm going to end it.
Question for Ben. I'm wondering, you know, on this run you've been on here, have at any point in time you've sort of felt overlooked in the division?
I've been doing this for a long time, and I'm all about paying your dues. And I feel like I'll be surprised if I get overlooked now, because now I feel like I've paid some dues. And now, you know, I've shown the world what I can do. But when I first came to the UFC, I was win and lose. I mean, you know, it is what it is. I wasn't showing what I could do, and you don't get, you know, why should you be rewarded when you're losing fights? You know, now that I put a string together and show that I am a contender, one of the best in the world, now we'll see. And, I mean, they gave me a bonus tonight, so obviously they're noticing something, so.
You were trading wins and losses not that long ago. It's been a few years, but some of the guys that you'd lost to are still up there. Obviously, Cain Velasquez being one of those guys. What would you think about, like, avenging that fight, or, you know, Arlovski, or these guys? Like, what would you think about those guys?
What do you mean, what I think?
Would you like to avenge that loss? Would that appeal to you?
If you pay attention to me, I'm pretty vocal that, you know, I've been calling out Arlovski, Cain. I'm here, like I said, I'm going to say it one more time. I'm here to lay waste to the entire division. It's every guy ranked in front of me. I put a target on them. If they're going to stand in my way from the belt, then unfortunately for them, I'm going to crush them. So that's what I'm here to do.
I was just wondering if there's extra motivation, I guess, to get those guys again, if that was presented to you instead of a title shot.
I would be lying if I said it wasn't, because it was there. I had something in me, but I've never been able, of my 9 losses, I've never been able to fight one of them again. And it was like, if I could just avenge one of them, yeah, it would be Cain. You know, I had, why? He's the, you know, for so many years held onto the belt and, you know, held a lot of guys from being able to fight for it. And, you know, I think it was worth more. Of my losses, he's probably the toughest one that's on there. It's probably worth the most, and it would probably mean the most to avenge that loss. And, you know, I have a good string of guys right now on my win record that are showing that I'm one of the best in the world, but I think adding Cain to it is what it's going to take to prove that I'm one of the very best heavyweights in the world. So hope that answers your question.
Yeah. Thank you.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Big Ben Rothwell. Another big win for him. And, man, could be fighting for a title in 2016. All right. Want to talk to Jimmy Rivera in just a minute, but let's talk about Sage Northcutt. Super Sage, our man. Our man is He lost to Brian Barberina. And, man, I don't want to take anything away from Brian Barberina because that was a massive win for him. On network television, the guy steps in on short notice, picks up a win. But I got to say, I did think it looked like Sage panicked a little bit, man. It looked like he got in that position. And let me preface this by saying I texted John Crouch afterwards, who's a good friend of ours. He's a coach at the MMA Lab where Brian Barberina taps and or trains. And I actually said, John, be honest with me, man, because John is – I mean, he shoots straight. I love the guy. That's one of the reasons I love him. I was like, shoot straight with me, man. You know, Brian, after the fact, says, I finished that choke, the side choke, the arm triangle choke, whatever you want to call it. I finish it all the time in practice from half guard. And I was just like, no, you don't. No, you don't. Don't lie. Come on. You don't finish it from there. Because to me, that's – I mean, granted, it's been a long time since I've rolled. I don't think it takes a detective to look at my physique and realize it's been a long time since I've been on a jiu-jitsu mat. But when I did used to train you know, back in the day, and obviously with the amount of MMA that I watch on a weekly basis, it's just not a position that you see that choke finish from. And I just thought Brian was kind of being, well, he's pumped up, he's in the moment, and just sure. I do that all the time. But John Crouch got back to me and said, no, I'm telling you, man, he does finish it from that position all the time. It's one of his things. And I was like, all right, man, I guess. But I don't know. I did think it looked like, even if that's the case, I did think it looked like Sage panicked a little bit.
It did as well. I mean, when you saw the replay, it looked like in his right arm, like he just had more room. Like there should have been space on the right side of his neck. Like I didn't think it would go out. But, you know, some of those guys, I mean, who knows? I think some guys just maybe are able to, because I like to Crouch has never shown to me like he seems like a guy that talks shady or talks up a guy. I mean, everybody hypes their guys up a little bit. But, you know, I think some of these guys are just able, when they put their arms together, they're able to generate some extra force. And for these guys, I mean, like, he came out and he didn't seem like he was, like, you know, bragging, like, oh, yeah, I can just generate a lot of force. But some guys must be able to, the way they do it. They got their technique down that, you know, that was the thing that Joe kept talking about. Like, no, for this really to work, he needs to be on the opposite side and be able to use his body. But right. I think, look at Ben, the way that Ben fucking puts guys' fucking heads into his chest and brings it and he's able to put guys out. I think guys are able to come up with some sort of little bit to their technique that able to, you know, able to skip a step, you know, that most guys aren't able to
like
do.
Like a special skill or something.
So who knows how fucking tight that really was. It might have been. To me, it looked like he panicked and it looked like he tapped a little bit quick, but unless one of us is ever in there and maybe feels that, who knows how quickly
that
it could have been.
Did.
Yeah. Like once he starts getting his arm, we're good, bro.
I don't need
to feel that. We're good. We're good. So, yeah, I have to think, you know, that it just – but you know, it did look like he panicked a little bit, but also, too, if you got a fighter that comes in, he's like, dude, I do this in gym all the fucking time. You know, hey, who am I to doubt it, you know? And if now you got the coach coming in there and saying, yeah, dude, I've seen him do it. He's got a way, something about his technique that he's able to generate more power than most people can and be able to put guys out or put guys on the verge of going out without really fully blocking off the neck and doing everything else, then that's a fucking dangerous weapon and good on him. But yeah, I was so jacked for him. He was so excited afterwards.
Oh,
how could you not feel happy for the guy? I mean, he was so proud of the win and you know, he had the belief in himself. And, you know, I love the fact that he's like, you know, well, I knew I was coming in to win. My family knew I was coming in to win, you know, and it's like, it was great. And, you know, I feel bad for Sage, but I kind of have a better feeling, like not so much of like when Paige lost, I felt so bad. I felt like the hype train hit a huge fucking block. She's up there and she was sobbing and stuff. And maybe it's just because, you know, maybe you typically, you know, you see these cute young girls that are just rising superstars and I want them to do what I want them to do. And I just felt so much bad for her because it was just like this. I just kind of feel like this was Sage is going to learn from this. You know, if it is, they're going to go back and be like, all right, now what did you really feel there? Are you sure you didn't tap or anything? But because it didn't seem to me like once he got in his hand, he wasn't really maneuvering to kind of secure more air sprays. He wasn't doing really anything. His left hand was just kind of floating there.
They say answer the phone, basically, where you put your hand next to your ear to create the tension and, or to create the resistance, and he didn't do any of that.
Nothing was going on. So I was just like, he's given up already. He's given up already. So
it was weird. The UFC provides all of us reporters with what's called flash quotes afterwards. It's a job that they don't always like because they try to go get quotes from the winning fighter and the losing fighter. You can imagine that the PR rep hates talking to the losing fighter, especially, I mean, here's a guy that's feeling awful, or gal, you know, that's feeling awful about a loss. All we got from Sage Northcutt in this flash quote was, "I'm just disappointed, that's all I can say." We didn't get any post-fight press conference, and I think that's understandable. Usually you don't bring losers to the press conference except for the main event. So time is going to tell what this is, but I think you're right. I think it is going to be a learning lesson. The guy, 19 years old, so much hype around him, so much pressure around him. Guys fighting on network television. I'll tell you what I was really surprised to see. So I do think in the end this will be a positive. I think the guy, you know, this will give him, you know, kind of slow down the hype train a little bit, give him a little bit of time to develop. I mean, hell, he may even want to go back to college. You know, he's been trying to decide what he wants to do. Does he want to go back to being a student at A&M and get through the engineering program? Does he want to keep fighting? So he'll have a chance to really explore that. What I was surprised to see was the backlash against Sage. I mean, it was Ronda Rousey-esque on social media. I know that you were here watching it on TV here at your house and cooking and hanging out and doing all that. I was working, so I had Twitter open and was looking at all these things. The backlash on social media was insane. And as we said earlier in the week, I get it. I kind of get it from anybody on the UFC roster. If you're on the UFC roster and you're making less than $80,000 a fight and you're pissed off, I get it. If you're a bantamweight, especially, I get it. Like, you're like, you know, or excuse me, a bantamweight. If you're a lightweight, I was looking at Jimmy Rivera's notes. If you're a lightweight, you're in his division, and you're like, I don't think this guy should be making what I make. I get why you're pissed off.
Yeah.
It was just like everybody, like fans, journalists, I don't know, everybody was just like, you know, going off on the guy. And I'm like, dude, why such backlash, man? Here's this guy that came in, you know, took advantage of his opportunity, shot himself way up in there, and he lost.
Anybody got the opportunity to go on there, and you have an organization like the UFC putting their weight behind you, it's not like he's going to be like, guys, I probably shouldn't. If anything, he's too polite to turn it down. It's not like he's like, guys, I probably shouldn't, guys, get this. Like, they're like, I'm sure there's just as other guys that are more deserving than this, but I appreciate it. Thank you very much for the $80,000, you know.
Right.
But, you know, fuck, people were hating on him. I mean, like he said, he's got the package going. He's got the looks for him going. He's got skills. He's got money coming towards him, you know. Good for him. And
just jealousy, basically.
I mean, you got no fucking reason really to hate on the guy. If you had the opportunity to get the money he was getting as early as he's getting, if anything else, you should be happy that the UFC is maybe adjusting a little things. And if you're doing the right things, you're saying the right things, you're keeping your fucking nose clean, and you're getting rewarded by these things, don't hate. Because if anything else, it shows that the UFC is willing to throw some money around. They're putting money at people. You should be happy that others are getting – I'm sorry that you're not getting there. Keep working. If anything else, find a way to fucking align yourself with some of these guys that are making the money. And then next thing you know, you're going to start hopefully getting some residuals, something kicking in there and stuff. But – you know, and if fans and media, I mean, fans and media are going to fucking, they love people, hate people, like on the drop of a dime. I just don't want to see fighters really fucking going out too much and talking shit about other guys.
And it was crazy, man. I heard some people saying, he was rushed. To me, you got to strike while the iron's hot. Here's this 19-year-old kid, this phenom. We featured him on this Dana White show. He picked up a couple wins. I mean, you got to strike while the iron's hot. People say, you got to give him time to develop. And I think he will have time to develop now. And it's the same thing with Paige VanZant. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with rushing guys to get them on your radar. And maybe it's too much too soon, but that's fine. Then let them slip back to the back of the pack and start to build their way up. But when you got a shooting star, when you got somebody on that fast rise, I think you just – you know, hook your trailer up and you go for the ride. And then when it turns out that, okay, this was too much too soon. Like, for instance, I thought Conor McGregor somewhere along the way was going to have a fall like this, and he just didn't. He kept proving us wrong. But how do you get to Conor McGregor if you don't just go, fuck it, let's go, man. What you got? Let's do it. Yep. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think you just jump on board, see where this train rides, and when it stops, like it stopped right now, now Sage gets to slip back down. Maybe he can fight on Fight Pass again. Maybe he can go to Fox Sports 1. But, you know, now he can develop slowly. But I don't think there's anything wrong with when the guy's on a quick rise to just jump on him.
Yep. And if anything, I think the UFC's proven, you know, that they're about riding that way, riding that silver bullet that's just shooting up. Because, I mean, if anything else, they would say, like, Conor, all right, no, you got the belt. Fucking defend the belt. Do this thing. But no, they're riding the fucking hype train, letting them fight RDA. And if anything, everything goes well there, who knows what they're going to allow him to do, because they're just riding the thing. We'll see what happens. You know, should he take a loss? You know, in this upcoming case, he could take a loss and still have a belt, and they'll still be pushing, you know, forward. So, I mean, I can't hate on him for trying to ride the hype train and trying to build these things up. And I think if anything else, it shows to other guys, if you somehow work yourself into one of those positions, they're going to put a lot of energy and a lot of effort to build you up.
Yep.
And that's the thing, you know, they're not about... It's an entertainment business. It might not be about, we want to make sure that the very best fighter is at the very best point of their career. And then we're going to make sure that he has the ultimate best shot, and everybody's going to be dealt with fairly, and everybody's going to be dealt with the same. Like, that's not how they do it. I mean, they're about the next big thing at the next big point, and it's constantly one after one after one after one after. So, you know, there's always going to be, and now that, if anything else, I think you're right with Sage, he's going to kind of drop down a little bit. He's going to get to breathe for a little bit. This is a guy that I think so much of this has been happening so quick, and he's dealt with it with a lot of maturity and dealing with where I think a lot of us at 19 trying to have all the spotlight and everything going probably would lose their shit, and if anything else would probably see their personality change in a way where just all that stuff where I think you can try to be as nice and polite and thank you, sir, thank you very much. And then after a while, you get to be like, fuck yeah, my shit doesn't stink. You know, like, I got Dana and those guys blowing fucking rainbows up my ass, you know. How can you not eventually run the risk of it changing? I think if anything else now, they can lay off Sage. Sage can keep maturing as a man because he's still a young man at this point. I mean, he hasn't even fucking, like, we're joking around the other day, probably hasn't even hit that last fucking growth spurt that comes from just being a fucking
man. He can't even legally take part in the MMA Roadshow.
Dude. He can't have one of your, not your father's root beer or an award-winning Pabst Blue Ribbon, you know, but I don't know.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens next.
I agree.
That's,
I mean,
for sure, but I think it could be. I mean, it always sounds stupid to say a loss could be the best thing to happen, or this could be a blessing in disguise, or all those things, all those, you know, sporting cliches or whatever. But I think this is one of those situations where those sporting cliches are absolutely legitimate. The guy is 19 years old, and maybe he did panic a little bit. Maybe he did kind of find himself in a weird situation. I mean, he looked good in that first round, man. He was quick. He was throwing that right hand. He had cut Barbarina open a little bit. It looked like he was rolling, and then maybe he got a little tired. Maybe things just weren't going his way, and maybe he did kind of fold a little bit, or, you know, maybe he had his heart tested a little bit. But he's 19 years old, man. He's 19.
Yeah, and I don't know. If anything, that I want to take away, and I want people to think about it, I'm like, what does it say for the sport and it say for the fans if, you know, this guy that pretty much does everything right, he's a nice guy, yeah, he got boosted up, but where's all the fucking hate coming from? What has Sage ever done or said anything that disrespected the sport, disrespected other fighters that he's fighting, and people are generating all this fucking hate from him? It's like, you know, the sport can't keep moving forward if everybody finds some particular reason just because one guy's making more money than another guy or this. Like, if you're a true sport of the fan, like, yeah, I think you can have feelings. You can be a little begrudged that your fighter maybe doesn't make as much as the new upcoming thing. But you can't have real animosity toward a guy that has, honestly, I've never seen anything that he's done to leave a black mark on the sport. If anything else, you know, he's probably getting your little kid sister more involved with him because she's like, oh, hey, who's that cute little guy? He looks like he could have been on the last Disney movie that I saw, you know? So if anything else, I would say as fans and other people that are fucking jumping on the dude, it's like, come on, man, just fucking chill out, relax. If you have any real anger towards Sage. Like, fucking, come on.
Well, I agree. Well, I mentioned the bantamweight division earlier, just to kind of round out the main card. Jimmy Rivera picked up another big win. He cashed $50,000 for the fight of the night with a win over Yuri Alcantara. I am a big Jimmy Rivera fan. I liked this guy for a long time when he was fighting on the regional stage up in the Northeast. He's finally getting his chance in the UFC. Now he's on an 18-fight winning streak. That is incredible.
That's crazy.
Last loss was in November of 2008 in his second professional fight. 26 years old. The guy brings it every time he fights. He comes out to scrap. He's currently an honorable mention on our bantamweight rankings at MMA Junkie. I think that's going to change. But Jimmy Rivera, man, I think fresh blood at bantamweight, dude. I mean, this is a guy, you know, we've been talking about the bantamweight division for a while that, yeah, man, we know what's happening up at the top. You know, you've got the whole Dillashaw, Cruz, Faber, you know, thing going on there. And then after that, it just seemed like such a drop-off. Like, there was just, you know, who's next? Where's that, you know? And now you've got this guy, Jimmy Rivera, that I think is going to be a contender very, very quickly and is just fun to watch.
Yeah, and I don't think he definitely, I think, probably merited the fact of, you know, at least definitely keep him up. I see the UFC's got him at 15 or whatever. Yeah, keep him up there. I mean, what a great win, because Alcantara, what a fucking tough dude. That's another guy. And if somebody's
veteran, man,
putting on an impressive display against a guy like that, you know, good on him. And, you know, it was a good fight. You know, I wish I kind of wasn't at the point, you know, trying to manage, you know, grilling some steaks at the same time, and probably give it a little more thing, because now
it's a tough life in the cold coffee world.
It's a tough life. I didn't realize that was a fight night, but so I kind of wish I would have to go back. Maybe I'll go back and rewatch that one just to make sure that I give it the effort and that it needs to have. But impressive win, and good on him. And you know, let's keep seeing him move up the rankings.
The prelims were not great on this card. They just weren't, man. Just a lot of decisions, slow fights. Just wasn't an exciting night. But I will say this. I told you, we got people out there. We got friends. We got, even when we're on the road. I caught a clip of some video that is I'm praying is going to make its way towards the interwebs very soon. But Diego Fajeda, at the end of the first round, let out an incredible burp that would put Clay Guida to shame.
I was just going to say, really? I was like, it's Guida, man.
It was massive. He sat down in his corner, and just this burp comes out, and it's so loud, and the mic happened to be on, and I'm praying that somebody at the UFC will release this video sometime this week. And then the great part was Saif Saud, who's a good friend of ours, a trainer at Octagon MMA, is basically right in front of him, and he's trying to tell him to, like, calm down, you know, all right, relax, breathe deep. And then this massive belch comes out, and Saif's just like, that was good. He's like, and then he says, and then he leans his head away, and he's like, I'm going to leave my head just down for just a little bit. Basically not trying to inhale the noxious fumes there. And I pray that this video makes it out. I was able to see this, but because of the way that it was shared to me, I'm not exactly able to just grab this and share it with the world. So if anybody from the UFC is listening, or if anybody knows somebody at the UFC that they can do some favors with, we need to get this belch out to the world, because I think Diego put Clay Guida to shame.
I love it. And who hasn't been there when... But I'm just going to put my head down here a little bit. He doesn't want to be like, I know I'm on TV, and be like, bro, you just burped the fuck in my face. Really? Really? No.
Yeah, Fox, the fight was on Fox Sports 1, and they were at commercial at the time. And yeah, so he's just like, I'm just going to pull my head out of the way so I don't have to breathe this shit in right now. On the Fight Pass prelims, Randy Brown did fight. I did want to mention this briefly. Randy Brown, of course, another guy that came to the UFC from Looking for a Fight, the Dana White show, picked up a win. Not the greatest win, not the greatest performance. Certainly the comparisons were being made to Sage Northcutt. I mean, here's a guy that was found in the same way. Of course, Sage would go on to lose later in the night, so maybe it's, you know, good that he didn't have those comparisons, but it was natural, of course, to be, you know, found on this show and to be compared to him. a good win. I do think Randy Brown looks like a legitimate prospect, maybe a guy that, you know, would have ultimately made it to the UFC through the Ultimate Fighter, or, you know, been picked up as a late replacement, or, you know, maybe just made his way naturally there. But I thought it was cool, man. I think that it shows that this whole Dana White looking for a fight show, I think, is fun. I like the concept. If you haven't seen it yet, I do recommend seeing it. I think it's fun. I mean, for everybody that's saying, oh, the Ultimate Fighter, I'm so sick of the Ultimate Fighter. Well, this is a new way to discover fighters. And yep. To me, I think it's cool. It makes you care and feel like you have a vested interest in a fighter that you wouldn't normally care about. I mean, when you get down to the prelims of many of these cards, and it's, you know, it's this UFC newcomer and that UFC newcomer, and you know, people you never heard of before, it's kind of hard to have a vested interest in a guy. But when you've seen the guy fight, when he's been on a show, when you've, you know, you know something about him, I felt kind of vested in this fight with Randy Brown. I wanted to see how he did against Matt Dwyer, and it wasn't the greatest fight in the world, it wasn't the worst fight in the world, but again, I think this is a cool thing because it makes you care about fights that you might not otherwise care about.
Yep, I think you said it perfectly. I mean, I think anytime a fighter has a chance to kind of showcase themselves a little bit, and in this case, actually get to kind of, you know, you get to watch it in a scenario that, you know, sometimes the tough fighters, you know, the tough series, it has been feeling to me like it has gotten a little stale. It has gotten a little repetitive. So I think the fact that now it's kind of fun to watch Dana and pals kind of going and kicking around, you know, it's funny. The fucking dudes are all got money. They're all doing their thing, you know. It's just kind of like, but I love watching those guys pal around because you get to hear them kind of talk a little bit off the cuff about these guys, and you kind of, you know, get a little bit of humor that's delivering these you see these fighters, so you're kind of into it, and it's kind of, you immediately become more vested in these guys right off the bat. So because it's funny, there's so many cards, there's so many fights, and a lot of times you're like, oh, is this guy's debut? And it's like, oh no, this is like a second or third fight. And it's like, what the fuck, you know? Right. There's just so many fights that any chance that you get to see these guys in another you know, light, you know, so something that kind of helps you remember who they are. There's so many guys on the roster. And, you know, I think this was a good case where, you know, it was, you got to see these guys in a way to where you're just like, wow, that was really, really interesting that you're pulling for them. I think it's great. You know, it keeps the sport again. It's exciting. And, you know, and it made people want to watch the prelims, you know, the fight pass prelims, no less. You know, like, we watch them because, you know, it's what we do, but, you know, we love doing it, you know.
Of course.
So I'm also the guy that gets there, you know, if I was going to 10 and I get free tickets or whatever, I'm going to be there pretty much at the first fight anyways.
Absolutely.
But now you have a little bit more sense of these guys because you're getting to see them. And I mean, kudos to them for the whole looking for a fight thing. I think it's a great way. Not that we anticipate that the Ultimate Fighter is going away anytime soon, but if anything else, you know, it's neat that these guys get to go out there. And I mean, because, you know, we go see Tough Enough at times and we see other amateur stuff. I mean, I think there's a lot of guys that are, you know, been working their way up that are right on the verge. So it's nice to see somebody that's just so recently been there and now has made the jump over. And then it is winning, you know, fights. I want to say this, there were some eye pokes and other little stuff that happened in a lot of these earlier fights. So it was just like, kind of brings the luster down a little bit on the fights. But overall, yeah, I mean, it was good. And, you know, good on him for getting the win and whatnot. But, yeah, I like that looking for a fight. You know, I was watching, it seemed like they've kind of switched the show up a little bit again, you know, not to plug Fight Pass, but after watching the promo they were running during the thing, I was like, you know, it was just, it would look pretty fucking funny. You know, I was just waiting to see him fucking hitchhiking on the side of the road just to fucking do it, you know, or something. But
it's good. I think it's entertaining. I think it's entertaining. It does introduce these guys to you and give them a reason to care. So I figured, you know, since we got our people around with microphones, since we did have a chance to talk to Randy Brown a few weeks ago before he made his UFC debut, I thought, hey, let's go backstage and find out what Randy Brown had to say after his UFC win and his UFC debut. So, while we re-up on our frosty beverages, let me why don't you sit back and listen to Randy Brown, Rude Boy, after picking up his debut win at UFC on Fox 18.
Talk about the experience. Like, obviously, it's kind of been a whirlwind. One day you're fighting in front of Dana White. Now you're here at Prudential Center in Newark, just fought in front of a huge arena. What are your thoughts?
It's just think it's amazing, man. I just can't believe it. You know, it's a great feeling, and I'm just embracing it all. You know, I'm embracing it all. It's an amazing experience, and can't wait to do it again.
What was it kind of like you thought it would be in your head?
That and much more. You know, I didn't. Of course, I got nervous. You know, walking in, everyone gets nervous. But the pressure, felt no pressure, and I felt home in there. It was just a little hard to get my distance because he was a lot taller. You know, but it was good, man. It was really good. I can't wait to do it all over again.
How often has that been a problem for you where you've had an opponent that was taller than you?
Once, but it ended very quickly. I took him down and armbarred him, you know. So this is the only guy that at my height would actually stood with me for a while, and I found myself chasing him, you know. So, you know, that was a little game changer there, but, you know, much more in the future, I guess, you know.
I'm sure no one really ever wants to go all three rounds and have it be a judge's decision, but is there at least something to take away from that? I mean, that's your first experience out there. You actually got full 15 minutes worth of time.
Yeah. Well, again, in training, I train way longer than that. And, you know, my sensei, Nardu, you know, he pushes me way past those limits, you know. And my whole team, everybody, you know, train with elite strikers, elite grapplers. You know, all those guys kind of just push me, you know, way past 15 minutes. So 15 minutes is, that's easy work.
So you're 25, right? Mm-hmm. And over the course of roughly year and a half, you racked up an undefeated record, I believe, was 6-0, all finishes. Did you feel this was the right time, or were you surprised to have made it to this plateau at this fast?
I think this was the right time. I think it was the right time, you know. I'm taking everything one step at a time, you know, and I think this was the perfect time, you know what I mean? When I came into the sport, the game plan was to take it step by step, you know, get into ring combat, you know, win the ring combat title, and then get to the UFC, you know, and then ultimately become a contender and champion here, you know, so one step at a time, you know, so perfect timing.
From a quick glance, it doesn't look like you took too much damage in this fight. How quickly would you like to get back in there and kind of take advantage of this momentum?
As soon as possible, man. I don't really do camps. I've just been training. I've been, camp is life, you know, and life is camp. So I've just been doing this, you know. I've been doing this for the longest. I've been doing this since, you know, since I went pro. I've just been fighting every 2 months or so, you know. So I've just been back to back to back. So at this point, it's life, you know. So whenever anyone needs me again, ideally I would like to maybe take a month off and just chill out for a little bit because I've been at it for so long. But, you know, it doesn't matter. If Dana needs me tomorrow, I'm back, you know. So.
All right, that was Randy Brown, looking for a fight veteran now, UFC veteran, picking up his win. Cole Coffey, UFC on Fox 18 is the books. Now we move on to UFC Fight Night 82. It was UFC 196 not that long ago. Now it's going to be a Fight Night card right here in Las Vegas. So one more week for us in Las Vegas, and then we start getting back out on the road and doing our thing. So what I thought was, since we wrapped up UFC on Fox 18, I had a chance to talk to the headliners, both Johnny Hendricks and Stephen Thompson, on Friday of this week, just right after we taped the road show. So I thought, why not sneak in a little bit of this in the bonus episode in the 44 and a half as we start looking forward to next week? So I figured, why not put it in there?
Why not? Great idea.
If people are wrapping up UFC on Fox 18, they probably want to go ahead and start looking forward to UFC Fight Night. I'm not going to get this. UFC Fight Night 82. I'm going to
Hey, just give it a couple more days. They might swap it up one more time, you know.
We've got of course, we'll have audio with these guys and video with these guys all week long, but I thought, why not get something in early? So let's start out with Wonder Boy, Stephen Thompson. The guy is excited. I mean, this is the biggest fight of his career. There's no doubt about it. He main evented last time out, if you remember, against Jake Ellenberger, but it was the Ultimate Fighter finale card, and it was after a massive event, UFC 189, and it just kind of got overlooked, to be honest with you, man. It was just a weird way. I mean, it was the next night, and I think it really kind of didn't seem all that big of an opportunity for Stephen Thompson. This, on the other hand, while again is a little bit of a deflated event, it's still going to be a big deal. It's in the main event. There was an interesting story that came out of this because Stephen Thompson asked him, hey, What was it like when the UFC called and said, hey, we're going to give you this 5-round fight instead of 3 rounds. Are you okay with that? And he said, they didn't call me to ask me. They didn't, you know, they just announced it. So I just found out I was fighting five rounds instead of three. And I guess Brett Okamoto from ESPN asked him the same question, and he gave him the same answer. So Brett tweeted the other day and said, man, this is just disturbing when you hear this. It's kind of a common occurrence, but it's kind of disturbing when you hear the UFC just makes these decisions without talking to anybody. So I went ahead and followed up with the UFC, and I actually tweeted this earlier today. I followed up with the UFC, and I was like, guys, what gives? I mean, did you really just put this guy in a five-rounder, not ask him if it was okay to go five instead of three? And a certain UFC employee, a UFC official, I should say, an executive, I might even go so far as to say, sent me text messages. He was like, dude, that's bullshit, and I'm going to send you text messages. So you go, where basically Steven's father and his trainer asked for the five-round fight. Said, please, put us in the fight, put us in the main event, give us five rounds. So maybe there was a lack of communication there somewhere within the camp. Maybe Wonderboy was just never informed. But just want to lay that out there, because as you hear this audio, you're going to hear him say, I didn't even know I was fighting five rounds instead of three. As it turns out, that's not exactly what happened.
Yeah, I mean, that would be pretty shitty if they didn't tell a dude. Like, come on, like, because the level of training that you need to do, I would think that they wouldn't do, because that'd have to be setting themselves up for some sort of trouble or fallout down the line. So, but who knows? But I like the fact, I like it when you get, you reach your people. You're like, well, let me just reach out to something, you know.
Just double check.
So, hey, good on that, man. That's why junkie shit rules, you know what I'm saying? You're getting that behind-the-scenes tech stuff, you know.
That's what's up. That's why we do this. That's what we do. So as we put UFC on Fox 18 in the rearview mirror, we start looking at UFC Fight Night 82. Here's Wonder Boy, Stephen Thompson. Hey, Steven, how you doing, brother?
Doing good, man. How about yourself?
I'm great, man. I appreciate you taking the time, man. I know you got a lot of these, so I won't keep you too long, but I really appreciate it.
Hey, no worries, my friend. Anytime.
Well, hey, listen, I know this was already a big fight for you regardless, but, you know, now it's a main event. And I know you did a main event last time, but, you know, it was just such a crazy weekend. There was so much going on. I got to ask, I mean, does this feel a little bit different now? I mean, you're going to be the center of attention. This is a premier opponent. You know, does it kind of get your juices flowing a little bit? Are you excited about it?
Oh, yeah. I'm super excited about it. But, you know, there was a little change, you know, a few days ago when I found out I was going to be main event, you know, doing five-minute rounds instead of, you know, 3 5-minute rounds. But nothing to worry, because, you know, we've been training 5-5s the past three camps. So, you know, it's just another fight. But I know it's, you know, we're main event, and I got to look at it as that, and I got to be focused. But, you know, I'm more excited than anything. And, you know, I'm not worried about it at all. I know my cardio is on point, and just ready to go out there and put on a good show.
Yeah, it's funny. I was going to ask you how that conversation goes. I mean, when the UFC calls and says, listen, man, we need you to step up, but it's going to be five, not three. I mean, is there hesitation? Do you put yourself through a workout real quick? How does that conversation go?
Well, you know, actually the UFC didn't call it. You know, they just bumped us up, which, you know, I'm cool with. And, you know, they just like, hey, you're moving up the main event. I'm like, all right. You can't complain, really. I mean, you know, send me out there and being main event for this card, it's freaking awesome. You know, it's a dream come true. You know, of course, I was main event last time, but now I'm facing off against the number two ranked guy in the world and former welterweight champion. So, you know, I'm super excited about it. It's just awesome. It's awesome.
Help us understand, I mean, how much difference is there really in the preparation for a three-round fight and a five-round fight? I mean, I got to think when you're training at the highest level, you're trying to work your way to a title, you're probably training pretty damn hard anyway. So, I mean, how much difference is there really? I mean, did you go into this camp saying, hey, we can take it a little bit lighter because this is only a three-round fight?
You know, I never think like that. You know, if it's a 3 5-minute round or a 5 5-minute round, I train the same way every time, and that's as hard as I can. If I'm only doing 3 5s, I want to push through those 3 5-minute rounds till I have nothing left. Same thing that I do when I'm preparing for a 5 5-minute round fight. You know, in the beginning when I was supposed to be facing Johnny Hendricks and it was supposed to be a 3 5-minute round fight, I was doing 5 5s already. You know, that's just how I do it. I'm so used to training with Chris Weidman, and he's always doing 5 5-minute rounds, and it's just a confidence booster for me, knowing that I can do 5 5s and I'm only supposed to fight 3 fives. I mean, come on, it seems easy, you know. But you know, actually, I was super excited when I found out I was doing 5 fives because I'm already in 5 5-minute round shape.
No doubt.
And you know, I'm not really sure what Johnny Hendricks is doing, but I'm ready for it.
Where did you train for this one, Steve? I know, you know, you mentioned training with Weidman. I know you've bounced around, you know, and trained with some high-level camps. Where did you prep for this one?
You know, I kept this one at home this go-around. Usually I go up and spend some time in New York. You know, of course, at Chris Weidman's, Ray Longo's, and Matt Serra's. But for this camp, I brought them to me. I just feel more comfortable at home, you know. I can go home. I can chill. I can relax. You know, I got my family, got my friends here to keep me focused, keep me positive. And you know, Chris came down for the beginning of my camp and helped grind me out. And I brought in some really good guys. You know, of course, my brother-in-law, Carlos Machado, and my wrestling coach, Thomas Lee. I brought in my buddy, Matt Miller. He's a Canadian Olympic wrestler. Ryan Hall is here this week, and we're touching up on some stuff. So it's a great camp, and I feel really confident, man. And of course, you have to. I mean, if you're not feeling confident, you know you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, you know, in training. So, man, it's I wish I was fighting tomorrow.
You sound pumped up. Well, let's talk about Johnny as an opponent. Obviously, a top level guy. When you look at him, what's the biggest concern? I mean, is it the wrestling? Because people have always said, you know, they want to see you tested with the wrestling, or is it, you know, the power that he brings to the table? Which one do you concern yourself with most?
Man, I would say his wrestling. I mean, you know, he's a grinder, man, and he's definitely the best wrestler I've faced so far. But, man, I'm just improved leaps and bounds in my wrestling the past, you know, four or five fights. And, you know, I think I'm ready. I'm ready to step up in that next level of competition. I'm ready to show the fans and the UFC that I'm ready for that. And hopefully, you know, depending on how well I do in this fight and how I beat Johnny Hendricks to determine whether or not I go for a title. But, yeah, man, I know he's got power in his left hand, and he's got a heart, like a skull of granite, you know, facing Robbie Lawler, getting punched in the face, and, he kept on going. That tells you something, you know? Mm-hmm. So I know he's going to be a tough opponent, but, hey, man, that's what, you know, I'm in the sport, and that's what that comes with the territory, you know what I mean? You're going to have guys like that, so, and I fought guys like that, so it's nothing new.
I was going to say, I mean, it's definitely a higher level, especially right now in their careers, but does it feel a little bit like a continuation of the prep for Jake Ellenberger?
Oh yeah. I'm preparing the same way I did for Jake. You know, Jake had his left side forward. Johnny Hendricks mostly keeps his right side forward because he loves to throw that left hand. They're both really good wrestlers. But, yeah, man, pretty much the same way. And I know they have their differences, and I know what those are. But, and we're prepared for anything he throws at me. If it goes down to the ground, you know, I feel great there. You know, working with Carlos Machado and Ryan Hall, my ground has improved tremendously. So, yeah, man, it's surreal, man. It really is a really cool experience, you know.
That's awesome. And I don't want to pick on Johnny at all, but I do wonder, you know, the weight issues that he's had in the past. Is that in the back of your head at all, like, what the hell do we do if we show up on fight day and this guy's, you know, over? I mean, are we going to take the fight if he's 2 pounds over? Are we going to talk about it? I mean, have you talked about that, or is that way in your head at all?
Not at all. I think he's got a point to prove. I think he wants to prove to everybody that he can make weight. You know, you hear rumors if he doesn't make weight, then he's going to have to move up to 185. But, you know, I think he's going to be on point. I think his weight's on point right now. I think we're going to see the best Johnny Hendricks, which is what I want. I want the best Johnny, you know? And I think we're going to see that February 6th. I think his weight's going to be on point. So it really doesn't – I haven't really thought about it because I know he's going to come in on weight.
You know, this is a fight – people have been talking about you for a while, but it's always, oh, this guy's fun, he's flashy, he's unique, he's an up-and-comer. You know, it's all these things where it's good stuff, but it's not necessarily people saying he's a title contender. Do you feel like this is the kind of fight where people start, you know, stop talking about, oh, his cool, flashy stuff, and they start saying, hey, this guy could have gold around his waist?
Yeah, man. I mean, this is definitely the fight. I believe, you know, when I defeat Johnny Hendricks, that could be a possibility. But it really, I think it determines whether, you know, how I beat Johnny Hendricks. You know, if I go out there and just crush him the first, second, or you know, third round, yeah, if it goes all five-minute rounds and it's kind of close, maybe. You know, I mean, he is the number two ranked guy, and I know the top three, four guys have already fought for the title, except for Tyrone Woodley. So, you know, when I go out there and win, man, why not give the South Carolina guy a shot at it, you know? Get somebody new out there. And that's my goal. You know, I'm going for the title, and I don't think if you know, if that's not in your game plan as a fighter, then you shouldn't be out there. So, yeah, man, hopefully after this fight, you know, there'll be a little bit more Wonder Boy hype.
Nice. It's kind of funny. I was going to ask you, you turn 33 next month, I believe. Does it ever become Wonder Man or Wonder Adult, or is it always just going to be Wonder Boy no matter how long?
I get that a lot. I get that a lot, man. And I don't know, man. You know, Wonder Man, it don't sound right. You know, it just doesn't sound right. I'll always be the Wonder Boy, man. I'll be 80. They'll still be calling me the Wonder Boy.
That's awesome. And just last question I have for you. I know you signed with Paradigm earlier this month, man. That's a heavy firm right there. A lot of heavy hitters on that client list. How did that come about, and what are you hoping they can do for you, man?
Man, you know, I hear nothing but great things about Paradigm. You know, he's amazing. I know, of course, you know, I met those guys through Chris Weidman. And, you know, Chris is a good buddy of mine, a good friend of mine. And I've been looking for somebody here, you know, the past several months, somebody to take my game up to another level. And, you know, when you think about a good management company, that's them. And that's the first thing that pops in my head, because I hear nothing but great things, especially, you know, through Chris and those guys. And me signing with them has also given me another, you know, just a big confidence boost in everything, you know, not just the fight, but the business aspect. And, you know, and I'm just glad to have them be on their team, you know, have them behind me.
No doubt. All right, Steve. Well, I appreciate the time. We'll certainly be there cage side next week. Any other last thoughts, messages, anything like that? Do you want to make sure we get out there for you?
Oh, man, I just hope, you know, tell all the fans that tune in February 6th, you know, you'll see a good show, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks, brother. All right, we'll see you next week, Steven.
All right, man. Have a good one. Bye.
Welcome back to the Mae Road Show. That was Stephen Wonderboy Thompson headlining UFC Fight Night 82 this upcoming week in Las Vegas. If you happen to be in Las Vegas for whatever reason, I did look at the PR schedule for next week, and both the media day and the open workouts, one on Wednesday, one on Thursday, are open to the public, and they're actually on the floor of the MGM Grand Hotel. So just out there in the lobby, not even in the conference center or whatever. So if you happen to be around Vegas for whatever reason for Super Bowl week, you can enjoy that. Usually they close one of those off. They do one to the public and one not. So that's out there. I should also say, hopefully you enjoyed this content. We did this is our first post-fight show where we weren't actually at the show. So hopefully we were still able to provide some decent content. I was a little hesitant to do a post-fight show when we weren't at the show, because I feel like we weren't necessarily providing behind-the-scenes insight, but I think we did okay.
Yeah, I mean, and they didn't get to see like what I normally get to see, which is John immediately running around after the fact with your little microphone. Can I get you for an interview? Even after the interview, not only is Mr. Morgan here, the hardest-working MMA journalist throughout the week, but after the fight, seeing you run around grabbing all the little things, you know, we didn't have that here, you know. You could have asked Sammy for his feedback, but I think he was sleeping most of the fight. So we don't have quite that stuff. But, yeah, hopefully people enjoyed it. And
as always, hit us up. Give us feedback at MMA Junkie John on Twitter, at Ken S. Hathaway on Twitter. Let us know what you think about it, if you dug it, if you didn't. You know, hey, we're just having fun with this thing, doing it for you guys. So whatever you think we should tweak, turn, change, we're down for. And, of course, as we always say, you know, you can download it on themmaroadshow.com. You can download it on iTunes. If you're on iTunes, you should rate us. You should review us. You should help us build this thing, because I'm just saying, we've got some people looking at those numbers lately. So if you want to
– Yeah, if you all want to help a little bit. Hey, and something I was thinking about, you know, because we of course, love the PBR, the award-winning. And in this episode, I guess you could say we kind of spotlighted the Not Your Father's root beer that we do like, you know, that we enjoyed in Chicago. If there's other ones, and if you're, you know, trying to find a way, like, how the fuck can I – give these guys something to bullshit and chat about. Hey, if you have your favorite brew or something that you really like, just say, hey, suggest out, set a review from the show. Say, hey, you know, love the show. Next time, hey, maybe pick up a six-pack of XYZ, maybe we'll give it a try. We'll give you a shout out for saying, you
down
know, for suggesting the beer. We'll give you our thoughts on it. You know, maybe we'll get a little.
Or maybe if you're like a PR rep or an advertising rep at a beer place, you can just send us some.
Oh, man, that's brilliant. Just send us shit. We will promise to give you a fair and honest assessment
of your
frosty beverage. And we'll talk about it on the show.
All right. Well, before we wrap things up, I do want to get to Big Rig, Johnny Hendricks.
Big Rig.
He, of course, now is headlining UFC. Goddamn, UFC 196. UFC Fight Night 82. I'm going to get this down sooner or later. I got a week to get it down. Wants to get a shot at the welterweight title again. Fighting Stephen Wonderboy Thompson in kind of a fun stylistic matchup. I mean, Johnny Hendricks tells me, as you'll hear in this interview, he's not going to necessarily just turn to his wrestling. He thinks maybe he can strike. Maybe he can. He's powerful as hell, but man, Wonderboy has got some crazy shots. I was actually, the new UFC video game, there's a beta test out right now for it. I downloaded that this weekend, and I was playing. It's only the welterweight division. I'm not much of a video gamer, but I was playing with Wonderboy Thompson. That dude's got some crazy kicks, man. Some crazy punches and kicks.
How do you get the beta testing notice? Is that on a computer thing, or is that on your Xbox?
PS4. Oh, yeah, okay. It's only open for a week. The actual game comes out March 15th, I believe, which is actually my birthday, I think, is the day it comes out.
You just made a good plug. I say somebody at the UFC or EA or somebody needs to send you a little something.
I'll be old, man. 38 in March.
Bro, I already got that beat, man. You know, if I go over saying you're old, I'm like, okay. Yeah.
I get the feeling. My wife just turned 33 last week. She's like, I'm 33. And I'm like, fuck
yeah. Yeah, you was robbing that cradle song. Good job. Good job. For all you homies out there with the younger ladies, well done. Well done. That's how we do it on the road show.
Wow. As always, it devolves in the very end of the road show. You should always know to stick around. If you don't like the front part of the road show, you should just stick around when they start to get stupid. all right, Johnny Hendricks. I did ask him this again. This conversation took place on Friday. I did ask him what his weight was because, of course, that's always a big point of conversation, and he wouldn't tell me. He said, I'm good, and I'll have pictures, and you'll know. He swears that everything's good, but he wouldn't tell me what his weight was.
I'd like to think he's still got that wrestler in him. He's like, oh, I can get it off in a few days and get off. But, man, we've seen so many times where he's pushed it close. But I don't know. I don't want to look too far. And when he's a professional, and I think he realizes that, you know, if he ever wants to have a shot to get back up, he's got to start doing it right. So maybe he wants to just also kind of – build a little suspense,
I think so. He sounded sure confident. He didn't sound worried. He sounded confident, but I was just like, it was the first question. I was like, come on, Johnny, you know we got to ask you about your weight. And he's just like, nah. I was like, well,
nope,
all right, dude.
Not going to do it.
Well, never mind. So, all right. Well, again, UFC on Fox 18 in the books. We're starting to look forward to UFC Fight Night 82. And while we re-up on these last rounds of frosty beverages and get ready to close things out, listen to our man Johnny Hendricks and get ready for Fight Week next week, once again in Las Vegas. Hey, Johnny, how you doing, brother?
Doing good, you?
I'm good, man. I appreciate you taking the time.
No worries.
All right, well, 1 week out from jumping on the scale, man. Let's get the weight update. Where you at? Let's get it out of the way.
I'm not telling anybody. All I know is that there's going to be some photos, okay? And on those photos, people will get to see where I'm at. You know, let's just say this is going to be the lightest I've ever came into a fight and the best I've looked for a fight.
Very good, man. We're happy to hear that. It's funny. I've seen you posting your meals and really keeping people in touch with what you're doing. I mean, nutrition has been like such a talk and part of the center of your career for the last couple of years, it seems. I'm just curious, what's the biggest lesson you've learned? I mean, if there's one guiding principle that you learned that you figured out, this is how you do it. What's the biggest lesson you've learned?
I don't know everything. I think, you know, really. you know, I know how to eat healthy. I know how to eat clean. Well, I thought, you know, and then, but whenever you're looking at cutting weight and doing all those kind of things, it's a different ball game. You know, I did it for wrestling, but you know, whenever I go up to OSU, I'm losing, even still today, I'm losing 10 pounds of practice, you know? So I'm losing a lot of weight. And here, you know, I might lose 8 pounds a day, you know, and that 2 pounds could be the difference between you burning the extra calories that you need to, the extra fat you need to, and, you know, also being older.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, let's talk about this fight, man. I mean, you went from 3 rounds to 5. How did that conversation go? Was it a tough call, you know, knowing that you had to make that change on such late notice, or was it an easy call? And how much different is the prep, really? I mean, did you come into this camp saying, it's just a 3-round fight. I can let off the gas a little bit.
You know what? No. You know, I know it's a 5-round fight. And I know that whenever they called me and they said, hey, would you mind doing a 5-round fight? I was like, not really. Because I've been running a lot. I've been running absolutely a lot every day. I've been running. And whenever I'm sitting there doing these things, I'm looking back even for my title shots. I didn't run that much. You know, so this is a good thing for me, is that, you know, it'll let me know where I'm at and where I need to make changes. You know, what do I need to do to make it better? You know, because really we're starting off fresh. You know, this is sort of my first fight. We're looking at it as a rebirth of me, and we're going to move forward. And as we do that, we got to make sure that everything's running on a good smooth platform. And like I said, being this be my first 5-round fight, as that, I don't have to worry about it being an actual title shot, you know, even though it is a title shot. But, you know, this isn't going to be as much press, as much stuff as a title fight. So I can sort of gauge where I'm at and what I need to do. And that's also meaning weight wise as well, the week that we get there. You know, we plan on being at a certain weight. And if we hit that, how easy is it for us to hit 170? All right, that's awesome. Or if we struggle a little bit, okay, we struggle a little bit. All right, well, now we know that next time it's going to be even more press and obligations to do things. Then we need to come in a little bit lighter.
It's funny you mentioned, you know, the lack of press. I felt like this fight was kind of flying under the radar a little bit. And now that it's the main event, yeah, there's going to be more responsibilities. Granted, it's just the last week instead of the full camp. But I wonder, you know, is that a bother to you, or is it kind of a blessing in disguise? Because I know you want the title shot, and it seems like, you know, being elevated to the main event, it seems like you may be able to get more attention on your performance than if you had been the co-main and, you know, maybe the headliner ends up being some classic and people aren't talking about you anymore. Now there's a real chance that if you put on a real performance, they're going to be talking about you for the title shot again.
And you're exactly right. You know, that's where my head is. I'm sitting here thinking, hey, if I can go out there, do what I need to do, do the right things, stay focused, know that he's going to be a tough opponent, you know, don't overlook him at all. And if I can do my stuff and my right, then it could be a chance that I could get back to where I want to be.
What do you think about Stephen Thompson? I mean, guy is super unique. You said don't overlook him. I mean, it would seem that your wrestling would be better than his, no question about it. But, he's been very, very successful with that odd style that he has. What do you think about him as an opponent? And did you bring in somebody to try to emulate him? Or did you just decide it's impossible to find a guy like that?
No, it's not impossible. You know, we have a guy, Rizak. He's been my training partner for 4 years now, and he actually mimics Wonderboy perfect, you know. And the only thing that's good about that is that the way that he throws the kicks, you know, I don't want to give too much stuff away.
Sure.
The way that Steven throws kicks, Rizak's able to do it very well.
gives you a good look at kind of how it feels coming in?
Yeah. It gives me a great look of what he's sort of going to do. And whenever he does it, he's also, you know, I can say, hit that move again. Hit it again, to where I start understanding how it looks and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, makes sense. Is this a fight, Johnny? I mean, I know that you love the big knockout, man, and you know, that big left you have can hit anybody, but when you do have a guy with such a unique striking style, I mean, do you think this is the kind of fight, again, without giving too much away, but, you know, do you think this is the kind of fight where you see you maybe go back to your wrestling roots because that's the easiest way to get things done?
You know, don't know yet. You know, I like to say yes, but really, you know, what if I get out there and everything he's throwing I see easy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, everybody's sitting here saying he's got this crazy, wild. We've seen it before. What does Machida do? You know, he fights just like Machida. So, you know, I've watched him for a long time, the way he fights. How did Luke Rockhold beat Machida?
Right back at him.
By biting him.
Yep.
You know, bite down sometimes and just go.
Very true. Very true. Well, you know, a big win here. I mean, I know you want to get back to the title. I know that's number one most important thing. There's a little uncertainty at the top of the welterweight division. The only guy that I could see maybe getting in front of you is Tyron Woodley. What would you think about that? I mean, he's making the argument that, listen, man, the only reason I didn't get the fight was Johnny's fault. Not to pick on you, Johnny. I know that was out of your control. But if he were to somehow slide in front of you, even if you picked a win here, would you be okay with that, knowing that, yeah, that fight fell apart because of you? Or do you feel like, you know, he hasn't done anything since then? He can't step in.
Well, hey, I asked to fight him again. You know? And I know that he's not going to want to take the fight because he says he's got a whatchamacallit, the title shot, right?
Right.
You know, I just know that, yeah, he didn't fight. He's not getting a title fight because he fought me, right? But because we weren't able to fight. But who's to say that? Who's to say that we could have had this fight now? You know, there's so many other ways. You know, like I said, I'm okay if they say, hey, this, and this. But, you know, like I said, I really, you know, I tried to get that fight back, and it didn't happen. So, you know, if he does want to sit there and wait, then that's fine, because I'm going to.
Awesome, Johnny. All right, brother. Well, I know you got some stuff to do, man, so I'll let you back to it. We're happy to have you back out here in Las Vegas next week. Any other last thoughts, messages, anything you want to get out there?
Yeah, just stay tuned. You know, I'm like I said, I'm super excited. I know this is going to be an awesome fight for me, and I can't wait to be back in the octagon.
Awesome, Johnny. All right, brother. We appreciate it. We'll see you here next week.
Hey, thank you.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Johnny Hendricks, Big Rig. We have wrapped up UFC on Fox 18. We have started to look forward to UFC Fight Night 82.
You did it.
I don't know what else we can do. I know. I got it right. I got it right. I finally got it right. I think it's finally getting into my head. Yeah. What else can we do? I mean, big things going in Las Vegas, but we'll talk about that soon. Of course, T-Mobile Arena opening up here in Las Vegas. Hell, we may be getting the Raiders if what the reports that we say are true.
Crazy stuff.
I think that's garbage. Don't make me root for the Raiders, man. Don't make me root for the Raiders, please.
I don't know, man. I mean, fucking silver and black, man. Those are dope colors to wear, though. But you're right, you know, I mean. But I'd probably take the Raiders over my beloved Brownies. Like, nobody wants to root for the fucking Brownies out here.
What's up with Manziel getting in trouble in Fort Worth, and the police helicopters are after him? And
well, supposedly, I mean, he already has his foot out the door and he's doing whatever. So who knows? I mean, like, we've never been good picking things. Well, I'm sure we'll fuck up our first round next draft as well. So Who knows?
Awesome. All right. Well, to everybody that's listening, definitely hit us up with the feedback. Let us know. Did you think it was worth your time, even though we weren't on site? Hopefully so. Otherwise, my wife's going to be pissed off that I left the house late at night and just came over here. If you tell me it was all worthless, and I'll be like, well, that was a waste of time. But then
you just lie. You'd say, oh, man, everybody raved
everybody
about it.
Everybody said it was the best episode ever. That was the best episode ever. So, yeah, hit us up. Let us know what you think. Obviously, give us the feedback on iTunes. Like we said, do everything you can. And more than anything, of course, thanks for listening.
I was trying to do one of those burps. I couldn't get myself to burp. I was like, where's Diego? Fajera, when you need it. Oh, I still got some of this delicious root beer over here. Look at me. I'm double dipping.
Double parked?
Yeah.
But. As our British friends would say.
Rude boy. Rude boy. That's how they say it in Jamaican. Rude
did
boy.
Did you hear his post fight? So his post fight was cool because, like, I mean, he's from Jamaica. And it was kind of cool. Like, he started answering, like, just in, like, typical, like, normal English speak. And then, like, his last sentence, like, he basically, like, switched over into, like,
oh, you're talking
full,
about with Rogan?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When he switched over into, like, full Jamaican.
Like, yeah, accent. I started listening. I was like, what the fuck did he say? Mm-hmm. I was like, what language was that? No, that's cool. Even just the other day, I put on some Jamaican music on the joint channel on Sirius XM. Fucking, there's something about Jamaican music, man. It just fucking just like, oh, yeah, you know, it just makes you want to fucking light up. Yeah. Get a- burn some incense afterwards or something, you know. Not that we would know anything about
Whoa,
that. You know?
I wouldn't know about that. Like, did this motherfucker pull a Morocco on me? Couldn't even get in.
Should just give you a fucking key to the front. Just come funny. Inside.
All right, we good?
Yep. I'm stoked about London, though. Let's get it on. Oh, I told you I talked to Albert about that. Albert and Avern are going to be over there. And he's like, oh, yeah, man, we're going to do it. He wants to do, like, some murder tours or whatever. Like,
yeah. My wife was just like, can you please not be as drunk as you were in Dublin? I'm like, I could probably arrange that.
It is going to be more expensive over there, that's for
sure. Exactly. So I'll probably try to be a little bit better. We'll make it up in Croatia and Australia.
We're staying at the host hotel for that one, right?
For England? Yeah. I just figured it'd be more convenient because there's... It'll just be easier.
Well, yeah, no, it'll be good. That way... We did go out or whatever, and say if I get shit faced, it's not like I have to go back to the Airbnb and see your wifey there. Like, if he's drunk, I know you're drunk.
Oh yeah, no. We'll just split up. All right, we're good.
Yep.
Yeah.